This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Today we're interviewing once again Dr. Patricia Kramer, a private consultant who founded the Wildlife Connectivity Institute and who works under contract with highway departments and other agencies in the West to plan and locate about opportunities for safe highway crossings for all kinds of wildlife. So welcome, Patty. It's been a long time since we've last talked, maybe 2 or 3 years. So what's been happening on wildlife crossing areas?
Oh, thank you. Thanks for your interest, Jay. Well, lots been happening, and it's good. It's not bad. And the biggest thing that's changed the landscape is that in the last Transportation Act, a wildlife crossings pilot program was brought in large part due to many nonprofit groups lobbying Congress. And in that program, I'm just trying to think how many millions of dollars, gosh, I think it's about $365 million over 5 years was and is to be given to departments of transportation and their partners in a competitive granting program for wildlife crossings, for studying where to put the crossings, designs, and other mitigation that's kind of nouveau, like not just putting fences up, but to try and do things that show all the opportunities that we have to help protect wildlife and roads. And so as a result, states are getting on board with, well, now we can afford this, and amazing grants are being giving out millions and millions of dollars to states to both study, design, and build wildlife crossings across all states, not just the predominantly western ones.
And you're acting as a consultant as the Wildlife Connectivity Institute, is that right?
Yeah, so I'm still research-based, and so I bring science to the whole process. So what I do in various states is I bring in ways to map crash data and then bring in layers of wildlife movement data and then quantify it all in a scientific manner that can be repeatable and say these are the top areas you need to look at. So although I dread being called a consultant, I am a consultant, but I'm just more scientifically involved, and sometimes I'm more of an advisor to bigger consulting companies like engineering firms.
So this federal program is the Wildlife Crossings Pilot Program, is from FHWA?
Yes.
Federal Highway Administration?
Okay. Yes.
So that's the name of the program. Okay, and has the infrastructure legislation made a lot more projects possible?
Yes, and the best one in Montana. There's been several, just to give you to bring it home, there have been several projects within Montana that have received funding. Some of them are, we'll go into it in a moment, but the best one, I believe, is that they've also opened it up to tribes, and so the Confederate Salish Kootenai tribes got about $8 million to build an overpass for grizzly bears over U.S. 93 on tribal land. That is like the crowning achievement of everything that's happened in Montana.
Wasn't that several years ago when that got funded and built?
Yeah, just I think last year's, so this is 2025, so let's say 2024, I think it was announced in that round of funding that they received that money. So the tribe receives it, and they work with Montana Department of Transportation to pay for the design and the building of the overpass and fences.
Well, was that in addition to a previously built overpass?
We do have an overpass at Varro area just north of Missoula on 93, and it's the only overpass in Montana. And so now this will be Montana's second one.
Speaking of those infrastructure funds that are being used, is there any Is there any concern that those funds will now be diverted by the Trump administration?
Yes, there is concern, as with so much that involves the federal government at this point. The funds that have been allocated, like with signed contracts, I don't believe they can be taken away. The funds that were announced in late December before the inauguration of the current president, those are in question. Now, what happens is the people that surround the current president really are the ones that decide what's happening with money, with programs, with agencies. And we have an ally in Representative Zinke. He knows, he understands about wildlife connectivity and wildlife crossings. Mm-hmm. So he's a state, you know, he's from Montana, state of Montana, in the federal legislation. I don't know if he has the ear of the powers that be within the current administration, but he and Senator Padilla from California, who's a Democrat, are both very big proponents of wildlife connectivity. So we have some friends in high places, but it's to be seen if that is if there's a threat to taking the funds from the program.
So Montana senators are they on board or not?
I don't know. I have not heard any conversations. Like, I'm not as politically involved with them. I am not sure if they have that ecological understanding.
On your website, I think it indicates that you take climate change into consideration when you're doing your planning. What does that mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. So some of the things that will not change with climate change are great places to think about where wildlife will be moving. So, for instance, in states that have some kind of elevational difference, like ridges and mountaintops, we believe that the ecosystems that are at lower elevations, as the climate warms and dries up a bit, that the what might be available at 5,000 feet now might be what is at 6,000 feet. So we are planning for where the animals may be at a little higher elevation, or ridges are real important places. And then the other thing that's important is the people that are in the Department of Transportation really have to plan for resiliency. That's a key word in their world. And that's when the snow melt in the spring becomes so overwhelming that it'll knock out culverts and bridges. And so a great way to help have a win-win for the transportation world and wildlife world is to plan for when there's a culvert or bridge that's going to be replaced, or a new one going in. Plan for the scenarios where there's going to be a lot of water flushing in through here more than the usual, and build your bigger structures that in these waterways also include terrestrial pathways alongside of them, so the terrestrial animals can get underneath the road as well. Mm-hmm. So replace those smaller culverts with bigger structures. So those are the two big things we're planning for. And then in the more progressive states, there is modeling that is looking at what changes with climate. So, for instance, in our work in New Mexico, we did some climate models for the New Mexico Wildlife Corridors Action Plan and found that eastern New Mexico and southeastern New Mexico, those more prairie and plains places, are going to be desertified, and the pronghorn antelope there are going to need to move. So we said, here's some important places to put wildlife crossings so pronghorn can escape these areas and move up in elevation and in places that are going to have rainfall, basically. So there are ways that we are planning for wildlife crossings in the face of climate change.
So talking again about elevation, do you think that species are going to be moving to higher elevations with climate change, and that you need to have crossings that accommodate that higher elevation movement?
Yes, absolutely. You know, so it's wildlife crossings east, west, and north, south, but it's definitely believed that animals are going to need to go to the ecosystems that best suit them, which we believe will be more of the higher elevation areas.
And so What's the cost of these? Well, there are several different kinds of crossing structures that you plan for. There are underpasses and overpasses. Have the costs of constructing those crossings, have they changed recently?
Yes, they have gone up, as with other things. Prices of concrete and steel have gone up, and who knows with the tariffs that we may be having nationally if that increases. We can say that the very low cost end is $100,000 for a smaller culvert that might not accommodate deer, but might be helpful for smaller animals, and that would be under a two-lane highway. Mm-hmm. Then at the other end, I'm not even going to give a number for the Wallace-Annberg Wildlife Overpass in California, because that's tens of millions of dollars and the biggest thing in the world.
Really?
But normal overpasses are costing, they used to cost over two-lane roads like US 93. They used to cost $2 million, but I think they're closer to $4 million now. And if you go over four lanes and eight lanes of traffic, you're talking upwards of $10 million if you've got to get across a big interstate.
Yeah, I see. Okay. What is the transportation ecology planning that you do? You mentioned that on your website. There are several different kinds of structures and facilities you have to plan for.
Yeah, so we used to call it, and some people still call it road ecology, but there's other things like railroads, airports, which I don't really work in very much, and also we're learning that linear infrastructure in general are also something to be concerned with, and this would be the power lines that take energy from places that it's being created, whether that be a coal-powered plant or a series of solar panel arrays or wind power. Even the transmission lines can be problematic. But my world is mostly about roads and wildlife in general and the traffic on them. And we realize that something as simple as, like, transportation ecology can come up with, hey, you know what, there's roads all over our national forests in, say, in Montana that are no longer needed because the timber's been taken out. Mm-hmm. Close those roads and keep people from driving up in there, and maybe even restore them back to a natural habitat and make them completely roadless so that people aren't getting into wildlife territory where the animals need to be protected because they are very sensitive to the noise of motorized vehicles. Or it could mean planting vegetation on the side of the road that helps pollinators like monarch butterflies. Or it could mean building a small culvert to get turtles through a wetland that the interstate's going through so that the females can go to an upland place to lay their eggs, as well as all the other things that we see when we see dead animals on the road and helping them get across the landscape.
So the species you focus on can differ from very tiny animals up to deer and elk and so on, bear?
Yes, and I'm working in Massachusetts right now as well as other western states, and it's amazing how important the turtles are. Like, you get to the point where there's so many people on so many roads that your animals become endangered. And that's really it's the story of not only the United States, but the whole world. The more people you have, the more the animals are blipped out. And then if they can get to an endangered or threatened status, then we need to be building crossings for them because the Fish and Wildlife Service has the power of the stick, basically. So you're not going to get a permit to upgrade that road until you help the turtles. So I'm finding out they can also be, like the turtles that we're looking at in Massachusetts, let's say Blanding's turtle, they're very indicative of ecosystem conditions in places that haven't been too destroyed. And so if we focus on sometimes those smaller animals, they're the remaining champions of an ecosystem that hasn't been totally obliterated. And if we can help them, it will help all the processes in the system as well.
Uh-huh. I noticed you mentioned Massachusetts, but I noticed on your map that you've worked in Vermont.
Yes.
What did you do there?
Well, it's really interesting because that was early work, like in 2010 and 11. And the person who initiated that project was a planner in VTrans, is what Vermont Transportation Agency is called, and they were looking for ways, just like we're doing now, to identify where you need to build wildlife crossings. And Vermont's been very good at mapping wildlife movement, existing culverts and bridges, and as those bridges, especially as they blow out from the remnants of hurricanes that have come up there. We were up there when Hurricane Irene blew out, the remnants of Hurricane Irene blew out a lot of bridges and culverts. So they're figuring out when they go to replace something, how do you upgrade it for who? Because they have moose, so you got to make it pretty big for a moose. So they've been pretty good about planning and actually win awards, because one of the key things is, we haven't talked about this, but is winning the hearts and minds of the people in the DOT to convince them that a little bit of effort on the people's part will do great for wildlife. And so they have a program called Highways and Habitats, where they educate people within the DOT how wildlife need to move and what people from the maintenance workers all the way up to the director can do to help make it better for wildlife to get across roads. So they're doing an excellent job for such a small state.
So there are overpasses, underpasses, and culverts, but you also mentioned deterrents. What are deterrent projects?
So from the small animals, we'll start from them again. We can deter female turtles who have to come up and lay their eggs in a dry place on a berm or the road right away. We can put fencing or even guardrail piled up like a fence to guide them to existing culverts or deter them from coming on the road. Then you've got a type of deterrent, which would be your 8-foot-high fence, which keeps a lot of the big animals off. And then in areas where the fence has to have a road or a driveway, we have a cattle guard. Many people in Montana know what a cattle guard is. So we started with double cattle guards. I had a master's student research different types of deterrents, and it turns out if the cattle guards got flat bars, the ungulates walk right across on those flat bars. So we have different ways, including electric pavement, to deter the animals from walking into the road at those openings in the fence. So that's usually what we call with deterrents, is those cattle guards.
So what are driver warning systems? Do they really work?
Good question. I'll be giving a talk on that in a couple of months in a conference. Let me explain how they work. So we have wildlife detection driver warning systems in the world, not just in the United States. They use a type of technology that looks down the road, a specific area, to detect if an animal's entering. And then if it does detect animals correctly, it will put on some amber lights and a warning sign to slow down. So drivers are typically warned about this with a sign before they enter that area so they know what's going on. Those systems are typically driven by technology that includes thermal imaging cameras. I'm also researching two systems right now, one that uses thermal imaging and one that is mostly using radar. And what I find works is when animals are restricted to a very small opening in the fence, typically about 60 feet is the one I'm researching in Utah, the thermal imaging camera is trained on the animal. There's some rules in the computer that it feeds into about the size of the animal, and it turns the system on. I believe that's working pretty well. However, there's the system working, and then there's the humans. Do they actually slow down? Mm-hmm. So we have radar data collectors that collect traffic data, and the people are only slowing down maybe 5 miles an hour in that zone, and sometimes they're even speeding up. So it's the human component that's really the hardest to work with, and these things can only be on two lane roads in very small areas.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
The radar is also on a two-lane road in Colorado that I'm looking at. It's not working very well, and I'll just leave it at that there's still more work to be done.
Yeah, right. So is there a difference between among states, depending upon who's at the head of the administration, whether they're Republican or Democrat?
Absolutely. It doesn't necessarily have to be the particular political party, but I just gave a talk in California a couple of weeks ago, and I just love saying this, don't let the pendulum hit you on the butt on the way out the door. And it really is a pendulum effect. If we don't institute small changes within the way DOTs do their business, then when a big project that's very successful, let's say US 93, a big section of it, say, south of Missoula, where I used to research, the people that worked on that project are very proud. They did a great job, but many of them think that was the one thing in their career that they had to do for wildlife. And there is a pendulum effect that has gone on in Montana for several years where they did great things on US 93 and some other places, but there's a general, and I'm not putting this on any one person, but the general gist is that we don't need to do much anymore. And so, yes, there is this pendulum effect, regardless of what political party controls the governor's office, that I'm trying to figure out how to not happen by instituting small changes so that there's not so much pushback.
So the projects, though, in Montana that seem to be, or the area that seems to be more active, is up in the northwest corner. But down in the southern part around Bozeman, there's nothing going on. Is that right? Or along I-90?
Well, there's a couple of different things that are going on that are exciting, because I like to liken our fields kind of like to the Colorado River and the Grand Canyon. It's just slow drip, drip, drip. You have to do this for years. So in the Bozeman area, a Gallatin County Commissioner, Jennifer Boyer, wonderful person, she has put together a wildlife and transportation working group, and we meet quarterly, so every 3 months, to talk about what can be done for wildlife crossings in Gallatin County. And so a lot of effort has been put forth through our different groups, I can go through and name them if necessary, about wildlife crossings in the Bozeman area. The number one right now that's been receiving a lot of attention is US 191 at the mouth of Gallatin Canyon, where elk are moving across the road and getting hit quite a bit. And so the Center for Large Landscapes in Bozeman put together a report and data and stats to say this is where we should put a crossing. They had a consulting engineer company come in and say, okay, this is where you should do it, this is how big it should be. And then they put in a proposal to the Wildlife Crossings Pilot Program, all together with Montana DOT, and they didn't win. So there is an effort right there. If you don't want to know mile markers, it's between mile marker 71 and 75 before you get to Gallatin Gateway. Hopefully someday we'll have an overpass there, or maybe a really big bridge to get elk and other wildlife across the road. And then...
After a big horn sheep that get on the hunt.
Yes. So 191, as it goes through the Gallatin Canyon all the way to West Yellowstone, that area, that whole road is getting, that has been studied for years, is getting upgrades. And so our great group with Jennifer Boyer met last week, I think it was, and we had reports from both our MDT representative there and other people that have been collecting data, and there's small and big changes, so that you'll be seeing things like signs that warn you to slow down. We may have something like a buffalo warning system. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. The Lava Lake Bridge area will have an upgraded bridge that will hopefully get wildlife across the road at the Gallatin River there. And there's many other bridges of places. North of West Yellowstone, Goose Creek, they're naming a lot of places that I'm not real familiar with. The Madison River there, that we could either put fence up to funnel the bison to go underneath, or put a new bridge in that would be big enough for a whole bunch of wildlife. So there's lots of small things, which I believe is the way you can get incremental change without that pendulum swing kind of thing. So a lot of people are trying, and MDT has a lot of great partners and nonprofits and public groups.
So MDOT is actually being cooperative, and they're working on projects, huh?
Yes, but I've always felt
that they were rather resistant.
Well, I can tell you something right now, that there's a difference between studying a problem and designing a solution and actually putting the solution on the ground. So what I hope is that all these studies that are happening on I-90 south of Missoula, as well as one on US 93 in the Darby area, they both got big grants from the Wildlife Crossings Pilot Program. Those are studies to look at what the solutions are. It's when MDT starts building more wildlife crossings that they'll earn the respect of the communities within Montana and the country.
Yeah. So is Utah one of the most active states right now?
No, they Utah's another close place I love, and I would say Wyoming and Colorado are the amazing people, and then Arizona's coming back up to speed. They got like $23 million for wildlife crossings from this program, but Wyoming and Colorado are the people to look to.
I see. So the project that you're regarding, have there been projects that have not been terribly successful?
Yeah, give me an example, because I don't know too many like that.
Good.
Let me think. The only thing that I think is not too successful is when you implement technology that the maintenance crews don't want to take care of. So if they're not brought into the process of something that we're creating for them that's work, that's when we don't have a whole lot of success. So I think some of the technological things are not so great yet, and also places where you have to rely heavily on a crew that doesn't necessarily buy into it.
So when you're looking at a project area, how do you collect data to assess what to do and where to do it?
Sure. Well, you've got to work with, of course, the DOT and the Wildlife Agency and say, what's important to you? So, for instance, I'm working in Idaho. It's really important to Idaho Game and Fish is these areas where they put telemetry collars on mule deer, elk, and pronghorn, and they know they're crossing roads.
Uh-huh.
So we bring in that data. We bring in habitat maps of species that someone might think is not someone, but a whole group thinks is important. So it could be threatened and endangered species. And then we lay the crash data on that. We lay, if we've got carcass data, we can throw that in. And then we bring in, like, traffic volume. And that's kind of the easiest thing to say. Bring that all in and rate every single mile of road with respect to all these different ecological and transportation factors and come up with the top areas that both need help from a motor safety perspective and also wildlife connectivity.
Your website shows that you're involved in conferences and webinars and even graduate student research. What's going on there with what you're
doing? Sure. I work with students in Oregon and North Dakota, and their advisors are wise enough to understand that this is not necessarily their field of interest, so they bring me on board, and then I help advise. So the Oregon student that I just helped graduate this last year, she looked at US 97 south of Bend and looked at wildlife vehicle collision and crash and carcass data where the hotspots were in a specific road in North Dakota. Another student I helped graduate last year, she looked at hotspot analysis. I helped her with that. The current student, he's collecting carcass data, which is very different than crash data. So he can help North Dakota DOT identify specific spots. So it's great to see students in the next generation getting involved.
That's great. Well, Patricia, we've run out of time, so I really appreciate this update and finding out what's going on. I've long advocated for wildlife connectivity projects, and I'm pleased to see that you're engaged and some things are happening. That's great. So today we've interviewed Dr. Patricia Kramer. She's a private consultant who founded the Wildlife Connectivity Institute. She works under contract with highway departments and other agencies to plan opportunities for safe wildlife crossings. Thank you very much for listening. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org or buzzsprout.com and listen to additional interviews that we've posted. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.